Bruce, getting you on the line right now.
Rabile. Yes, here I am. I've not been anywhere. I apologize. Davos, I was looking out the window at all of the weird and wonderful characters walking by. You were just saying that African CEOs are very pessimistic about the future, and it's completely the opposite here in Davos. For American CEOs, and there are lots of them, lots of European CEOs, not as many Asian participants or Middle Eastern participants as I might have expected. And certainly for South African CEOs, people I've been talking to here, they're putting a brave face on a lower than usual sort of quantity of people from South Africa here. I did see Sipho Phatshana earlier on. He's been given a really important role, and something that may very well bolster CEO confidence in Africa, and that is to drive ahead of the World Economic Forum Africa gathering Ethiopia on the 12th and 13th of September, to drive the participation of corporations and also to encourage the creation of small businesses. So he's got himself a World Economic Forum job. But yeah, by day three of Davos, you kind of know your way around. You can start making sense of the vast array of discussions, seminars, and sessions that are available. And a friend of mine put it to me this afternoon, saying it's like an market university with no exams. It's the best kind of university in the world in that case. Really rich experience. Some of the world's leading figures from business, academia, civil society, and government all here. One session that I did manage to get to today, democratic capitalism, dead end, or shared destiny. A panel headed by a head of a business school in Oxford, but it included people like Paul Polman, the guy credited with turning around Unilever, a really, really bright and engaging individual. Neil Ferguson, the author, the historian, the teacher. Dambisa Moyo, who's the spokesperson and who is on a board, really outspoken. Spoken board member of multiple companies. And then the brilliant Financial Times columnist, Martin Wolf. And you sit there and you learn very quickly just how complicated the world is and how often we try and simplify it to its barest essence. And we're just so fundamentally wrong on so many different things because the world isn't a straight line. There is nothing simple about democracy. There's nothing simple about capitalism. And when you mix the two, it's certainly a far more complicated place. I mean, Paul Polman, for example, telling us today that governments nowadays are not fit for purpose in an increasingly complex world in which banks are too big to fail and people too small to matter. It's profound stuff. Encouraging businesses to think differently about their role into the future, and especially something pertinent for South Africa. There is no business case in enduring poverty. If you've got a country like South Africa that is so unequal, how on earth do you as a business leader expect to make money into the future? I mentioned I bumped into old money show mate Richard Quest yesterday, and today I got to spend some time chatting not only about Davos, but also about South Africa. Now, South Africa, very close to Richard Quest's heart. He loves South Africa, but lots of people aren't going to like what he had to say, not only about the country, but also about SAA. And I'm afraid he's spot on in his assessment of South Africa. I started off by asking Richard Quest just how many times he'd been here. Did I say 20 times that Richard Quest's been here?
Less than 20, but more than 18. It's been a lot of time. And what's interesting is the way in which it has grown. Not only did they build a massive section onto the building that never existed before, but the cordons got bigger, the watchtowers have gone up, there's concrete, there's gadgets to stop vehicles. The whole security panoply here has become huge.
Is that a Trump thing, or is that just a Davos thing?
It's a Davos thing. I mean, you feel a certain keenness of security vetting when the president's here, but it's throughout, because we've got Merkel here this afternoon. You might have Xi here last year or 2 years ago. So there's always somebody. And there's enough CEOs in there, frankly, that God forbid something were to happen, you'd do serious damage to the global economy.
And this is about the global economy. Yes. This is about connecting the dots. This is an amazing place for connections.
Yes. And I think the difference between over the few years has been, now I think we're seeing a lot more private equity, joint ventures, financiers, investors, also along with a lot more technology companies coming here, seeking out each other, but also seeking out problems to the issues they know they're going to face. I heard Sheryl Sandberg last night at Facebook talking about, you know, privacy, data, all these issues. They all know they've got to deal with. And on the other side, you've got the social issues. And they come together beautifully here because they both recognize that the problems they face are the same ones.
But there's a disconnect as well, because you had Donald Trump come here, not mention climate change at all, talk about American growth, not talk about the consequences of unbridled growth. There is the contradiction.
Yeah, but you can't help if one person comes along and doesn't play by the rules. I mean, he came to make a speech. He didn't give a policy speech. He was broken down into a litany of American success economically, which is true, followed by a variety of comments about apocalypse, doomsayers, and the environment. I think you have to understand why this place works. And it works because decision makers are here. Now, look, it may be unpalatable for viewers to accept, but ordinary people can affect change in their daily lives. These people can affect change for countries and continents.
I was in a session with Neil Ferguson this morning and Martin Wolf and a bunch of other people talking about the future of democracy, talking about the future of capitalism. And actually, the role of civil society is far more important than corporations or governments.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you on that. In fact, I don't agree with you on that. Because the role of corporations has become even more important. The CEO as the moral barometer of today.
That's terrifying.
No, it's not.
Terrifying.
No, I don't agree. I really don't agree. Because I think that the CEO, the proper CEO, who has true stakeholder mentality, recognizes he or she has to do well for shareholders. But you'll only do well for shareholders if you do well for employees, and you'll only do well for employees if you keep your customers.
So the notion of stakeholder capitalism very much alive and
completely,
well.
Completely. It was around in the 90s. Yeah. It was around in the 90s. You're old enough to remember.
I just.
It was around in the 90s when it related specifically to corporations. Now it's relating to economies, stakeholder economies.
So tell me about Team South Africa here. You mentioned Sheryl Sandberg. She's taken over the museum, the Kirchner Museum, where South Africa used to be. It's Davos-like for South Africa this year. In previous years, you've trotted out ministers, you've trotted out South African delegates. Has there been much CNN interest in South Africa this year?
I think South Africa is here. They've tried to put scarves around my neck on numerous occasions. They've tried to interest me in discussing things, but it's not got the same profile as it has in previous years. And that might be economic. They just don't feel they can afford to spend the money to come here and do it. It might arguably be they just don't see the need to do it. But at the end of the day, there's no point in coming here to say, invest in me if you haven't got the policies worthy of it.
Well, 2 years ago, Cyril Ramaphosa came as the delegation leader, and it was a little bit like having Nelson Mandela back here again. Everybody wanted to touch his cloak.
Yeah,
but it's not like that anymore.
Two years ago. Well, since then, we've discovered just how awful the state-owned capture was of enterprises. Now, this is one of those few subjects where Pravin Gordhan says, if you think it was bad, I'm telling you it was worse. Now, you tell me how anybody who for the last 5 years, 10 years, has come here and said, South Africa's going really well, we've got everything under control, we've got this, that, and the other, suddenly turned around and said, well, actually, the entire economy was hijacked, by the way, and we're terribly sorry to tell you that the losses are in the billions. Well, actually, we really don't know the trillions. And by the way, even if it was bad, it was worse. And we're not even sure we've dealt with it.
And so, in order to be taken seriously here again, we really need a big fat broom and some chains and some prison time.
Well, how many people have gone to prison so far?
Yeah, I'll get back to you on that point. On to other things. I mean, you're a big fan of airlines. You like to travel the world. You do shows from airlines. Mm-hmm. SAA, I don't know if you've ever flown SAA, if you've ever had the joy.
Of course, I have an excellent airline.
What's your view on the turnaround there?
Well, first of all, the idea of causing a business emergency, which basically means they're out of money.
Yep.
Secondly, the amount of money that the South African government has to put into the airline is a simply staggering amount. And thirdly, unless there is a proper restructuring, proper means government hands off.
Yep.
Properly means let an airline person run the airline. But otherwise, you've got to ask the question, why not just shut it down?
Or give it to another African airline to run with a tail.
No, that's shutting it down. Mm. If you look at what Malaysia's options are at the moment, similarly, at the end of the day, for South African airlines to remain profitable, or not remain profitable, to become profitable, is going to require the most drastic restructuring. And even then, it might not.
Is it worth having a go with a proper board, proper CEO in place? Is it worth having a go?
Of course it's worth having a go, but I'm telling you that'll never happen. I'm telling you the government can't keep its hands off it. I'm telling you politicians cannot stop interfering in airlines. They've done it for decades in South Africa. They will continue to do it for decades more. Until they hive it off, put it in the private sector, sell it to another airline, or shut it down and let somebody else come in who can run an airline. You're just going to have to accept the government will have to pay money. That's fine if that's what the policy is going to be. If that's what your policy is, that's okay. But please, don't try and pretend you're restructuring when actually all you're doing is moving the check chairs on the Titanic.
How does that then go to the credibility of the South African government at a place like this where it can't make those hard decisions?
What credibility? I mean, the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, he came in knowing that South Africa's government has minuscule credibility following the Zuma years and the state capture, the capture of state-owned enterprises. You can't suddenly whitewash it away like you're cleaning a wall. People here, look, don't get me wrong though, the opportunities in South Africa are huge. The potential is enormous. The labor force is fantastic. But you cannot just turn around to people and say, oh, by the way, don't worry about that nasty little business where trillions were siphoned off in a very corrupt environment, of which, by the way, I was a member of the government at the time. I was a member. I see nothing, saw nothing, heard nothing.
Yeah, Richard Quest pulling no punches there. What credibility in Davos for South Africa. Then on to Professor Julia Lohmann with an idea that we could use in South Africa, and it's seaweed farming. Just as we've turned paper pulp into viscose, which is a very comfortable fabric, and bamboo into socks and underwear, seaweed has got the incredible potential as a new material for the future. Julia Lohmann, who is a professor, she's a doctor, and she started a whole new business all around seaweed. I asked her to explain this wonder material.
Yes, kind of in the same way, and at the same time trying to invent a new way of turning nature into a materials of making that does not harm the natural environment, but actually try to find regenerative practices. Because the fantastic thing with seaweed is that it can benefit the ecosystem in which it grows. If you have a seaweed farm, for example, and you hang it into over a sandy bottom, it offers shelter for the fish. It increases the habitat capabilities of that environment and also pulls out some of the excess fertilizers that run from our rivers into the ocean and really otherwise cause these unchecked algal blooms. So seaweed really can generate this positive ecological impact, which I think is really fascinating.
So how useful a material is it? How flexible a material is it? I've seen thread being made. I've seen lots of applications for it. Is this the future of replacing plastic potentially one day?
Yes, you can make bioplastic from seaweed, and that means in very specific circumstances where you need the plastic to last for a specific time, you can already replace some, you know, amounts of it. There's great research being done there. I think there is a huge variability of materials that we can make from it. I'm working personally on veneers and leather replacements and so forth, but we need to work across all levels of complexity, all the way from molecules to ecosystems, to not make the same, cause the same problems we have caused on land. So I hope the seaweed can offer a blueprint for a different way of engaging and fixing and kind of re-stabilizing or kind of reconnecting ecological problems with social ones and then solving that.
A lot of people thought bamboo was the answer to that. So you get bamboo clothing, you get bamboo flooring, you get bamboo everything. I mean, is seaweed the new bamboo then?
Yes.
Have you got a commercial application for it?
I have not yet. Yes, I have some, but I think it depends on which place you grow it in.
Julia Lohmann, she is looking at seaweed as a new material for the future. I told her that I come from South Africa, and she looked at me like I had discovered a gold mine. She said, you've got beautiful seaweed there. It's an industry, Arabile, for the future. That's it from Davos. We'll see you next week.